am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
Yes, we are fulfilling our own destiny. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in this great big land of ours. This is Purpose Talk Radio, and today is Monday, May 19th. I am your host, Cindy Freeman, and we will soon be talking to Michael Dale over in Spain. It's the first time I've really done one that's way on the other side of the oceans. So, I mean, when Barbara was in Germany, yes, we talked, but, you know, I wasn't the host then, so this will be interesting. We did try it a couple of weeks ago, so if the name is familiar, please understand that we had some technical difficulties a couple of weeks ago. So, gratefully, Michael has agreed to come back on this week, and we're going to start this whole thing over again. So I do thank him for that, and we'll bring him on in a couple of minutes. And I'll introduce you to him as well, of course. If you are trying to find out who else we will be having on the show, you can find that out by going to PurposeTalkRadio.com, PurposeTalkRadio.com. And with that, we have our past guest list, our future guest list, as I get them and have them available for you. And then, of course, we do have some of our archived shows, as well. In addition to that, you can find archived shows at the Blog Talk Radio /Purpose Talk Radio site. They are all kept there. The ones prior to that that we had over at BBC also are on our website, though. We've been on the air about, 3.5 years now. It started out with Barbara Patterson and Jan Revelle. It then was just Jan, and then I came on as kind of an administrative place there. And now you've got me, Cindy Freeman, hosting the show, and it's been a lot of fun. I love starting Mondays this way. I really do. It starts my week. It refreshes life for me, and I hope you get something out of it, too. The purpose of Purpose Talk Radio is very simple. We have people on our shows who are living their purpose and who want to share with you what that purpose is, how they came to achieve it, and maybe some things that you can learn from it, from their experience, to help you live your purpose. And one of the things that we do have is our theme song, is I Am Who I Am, for that very purpose. You know, we all have our own road in life, and we know who we are. That song is by the group True Trinity, and you can find their website, TrueTrinity.com. Those members are Jillian Clark, whose voice you heard singing the song, Rachel Martinez, and myself. So, having said that, I will bring on Michael here and have him say hi before I actually introduce him to you. And I accidentally picked up someone else, so I'm putting her back on hold, someone who's just listening. And now, let's try again. I will bring Michael on. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi there. So you are all the way over in Spain, huh? You know, it's 2:00 in the afternoon here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it is getting to be late evening by you, correct?
That's right. Yes, and the sun's just starting to go down. It's quite a glorious day.
Nice, nice. So, what time is it by you?
9 p.m. or just after.
Okay. And, like, what kind of, so you have, is it spring or is it summer over there? Or what kind of environment do you have?
I would say summer's on the way and spring's in full swing.
Nice. And do you have snow and the cold winters like we have over here, or is it? I've never been over there, so I don't know.
As far as I'm aware, where I'm living in Alicante, which is outside Alicante, it very rarely snows, but other parts of the country, yes, it does snow, yes.
Okay. Well, welcome to Purpose Talk Radio, and I appreciate it, as I said, for you coming back in again, and hopefully we don't have the problem that we have with Blog Talk Radio last week. It was like disconnecting us both and wouldn't let me back into my studio line, and you just never know about technology, but it is the fun that, you know, we get to do this from home. We don't have to go into a studio either, and we can do it across the sea, so.
Yeah, it was a great experience.
Well, let me tell you folks a little bit about Michael and what we're going to talk about today. Michael Dale left school at age 15 because the system just did not serve him. You know, we've had a lot of people that do that for various reasons. But his life then, of course, went a very different direction from probably what his family would have thought, because he became no stranger to adversity. He went to rehab for the first time at age 17, attempted suicide for the first time at 18. Intermittent bouts of drug-induced psychosis as consequence of the substance abuse and depression hallmark his progression into childhood, or into adulthood, excuse me, from childhood into adulthood. And then at 25, and by nothing short of a miracle, still alive, Michael realized he needed to change or die and began his process of healing. And that journey within over the last 7 years has seen Michael transform from a fearful, anxious, addict, alcoholic, full of self-loathing, pain, and neurosis, into an open-hearted, passionate, authentic man. He is trained in one of the most advanced systems of communication ever created, called the Thinking Environment. He works as a coach and facilitator, supporting individuals and groups to realize and fulfill their potential. He's a poet. He's an author of 2 books. And as I know you will hear, a truly inspired individual. Inspired as well as inspirational. I had the chance to talk to him on Skype a week ago and got to hear a little bit more after what I'm going to be sharing with you. So basically, living proof that lasting positive change is possible if you are willing to do the work. Michael's journey is a testament to the indomitable human spirit and the healing power of poetry, as well as living his purpose. Oh, welcome officially now, Michael, and thank you again. So, okay, I mean, we've heard a little about this history piece, you know, but what was the actual, was there a turning point or something that happened? You said, look, you know, we know this isn't working anymore, and that you came to realize that your purpose was going to be something different. What was that point in time?
Well, I think it would be easier for me to sort of give you some context around my lack of purpose and what I perceive as a kind of purpose epidemic that many of us are experiencing.
Sure.
And perhaps the reason that this show even exists.
Okay.
Because in my experience, human beings are purpose-driven animals. And we've been driven by survival. Yet we've reached this point in our evolution or our development where a lot of us don't have a sense of purpose anymore. And I'm curious about that. Hello?
Yes.
So I think I'm there. Hi, Cindy. Yeah. So what really interests me is the lack of purpose that so many of us
right.
are burdened with, and how that pertains in no small part to multiple intelligences or developmental lines, as Ken Wilber calls them. And most specifically, this is as a result of the marginalization of most of our intelligences in favor of intellectual intelligence. And that was a process began around the 19th century. There's a wonderful talk by a chap called Ken Robinson, TED Talk. And he said that basically, at the beginning of the 19th century, industrialization began. And for the first time, schooling systems became uniform all over the world. And there and a hierarchy of subject was installed. And the subjects that supported industrialization the most were put to the top, and those were, you know, mathematics, science, languages. And then below that was the humanities, and then below that was of course, the arts. So what we then experienced was essentially the marginalization of many of our different styles of thinking, and the favoring of one particular way of perceiving and experiencing life. And this is a really, really fascinating subject. And what and you know, as a consequence of industrialization, we're having this conversation right now over the internet. So it's not to say that intellectual intelligence is necessarily a bad thing, but it is to say that it has served its purpose incredibly effectively, and it's now time to start looking at the other developmental lines or multiple intelligences that we have marginalized and put to one side as a consequence of favoring intellectual intelligence. So this is a really, really interesting thing to be alive as a human being in the world today, because there's this incredible convergence of all these different intelligences and emerging experts in all these different areas. So for example, we've got a lot of people who are wondering, you know, what is my purpose? Why am I not enjoying my day job and all that kind of stuff? And the reason is because it's not supporting the lines of development that inspire us. Like, for example, one line is the emotional intelligence. Another line is somatic intelligence. Another line is cognitive intelligence. Intelligence is about our ability to hold perspectives, again, as Ken Wilber describes it, but also our ability to think, the act of thinking itself, our ability to identify the assumptions that we are making and remove any limiting and untrue ones and replace them with true and liberating ones. It's about the beliefs that we hold about our life. This is the work of Nancy Klein, which is the thinking environment. Very, very interesting in the cognitive line of development. So what's really amazing about this is how it relates to purpose. So I'm doing a job in which I'm heavily involved in intellectual work, and it's not really satisfying me. And the reason is because a lot of my other faculties are not being utilized, because I'm doing a job that serves the need of a particular goal, and the goal was industrialization. And this is how it's so amazing that lines pertain to goals or intelligences pertain to goals, because if there's something in particular I want to achieve, there's multiple intelligences that I need to draw on. And as a result of us really being marginalized into one particular type of intelligence and intellectual intelligence sort of being a dominant factor in all other things, so for example, gut reaction and that kind of stuff, by our head of like this makes sense or that makes sense and that kind of thing. And as Ken Robinson put it in one of his great talks, you know, communities depend on a diversity of talent, not a singular conception of ability. At the heart of the challenge in terms of looking at education, absolutely reconstitute our sense of ability and intelligence, and to stop thinking in this linear intellectual fashion. And intellectual intelligence is a very interesting thing, because in a way, intellectual intelligence can actually be a very dangerous thing without, for example, moral intelligence and spiritual intelligence. Because without a moral intelligence, and, you know, morality has a kind of bad name, because a lot of, you know, morality has been quite abused in many ways. And moral code, as the samurai did, something like that, is an incredibly powerful thing. And the other thing is, of course, a spiritual intelligence, which, of all the many traditions, leads to the realization of oneness, the movement beyond duality, beyond dichotomy-based right and wrong thinking, to an understanding of really the non-dual, the essence level of reality, as Arnold Mindell calls it. So if we look at the moment, if we look at maybe we've looked at some of the benefits of really focusing only on intellectual intelligence, and as we've seen incredible advances in technology, incredible advances in medicine and many other areas. However, we're also seeing things like polluting and fracking and mining and all these other kind of things. And if we think about that for a moment in the context of the intellect, well, if I'm an intellectual and I don't believe in any kind of spiritual or moral disappear, so it really doesn't matter what kind of legacy I leave in my stead. Whereas if I have some kind of moral code, and if I have some kind of spiritual grounding, I'm going to be more able to think of generations to come, and to think of my impact on the world, and to think of myself as part of one sort of organism, rather than an individual finite ego just going around doing my own thing. And this is a really, really interesting point, because it seems like a lot of these very negative environmental behaviors and other such things are generally fear of scarcity. And of course, without a kind of spiritual education, for example, one is very associated with a sense of scarcity. So that's a really fascinating point.
Okay, Michael. So there are people who, of course, find themselves, you know, in an intellectual world, and that's where they find themselves. That is their purpose. That's what they're supposed to be doing. The scientists, the doctors, the medicine folks, things like that. You know, and so I understand that. You know, for you, I'm hearing you correctly. You know, for you, that wasn't a direction that was fitting for you. You needed to find something else other than that intellectual line and that expectation that, you know, the top scientist or the top whatever it happened to be. Is that what I'm hearing from what you're saying?
You needed a different outlet? Very much so. I needed a different outlet. In my judgment, a lot of people do. A great example would be a woman called Jean Lynn. Gillian Lynn went to school in the 30s, and she was an incredibly hyperactive child. And she was disturbing all the other children, and she wasn't doing homework on time and all that kind of thing. And her teacher at the school said, Gillian, you know, you have to take your daughter to a doctor. So her mother took her to a doctor, and, you know, they went to the doctor's office, and she was sitting there with her hands on the chair, and she was fidgeting. And, you know, her mother started to explain the problems to the doctor. And then the doctor said, Mrs. Lynn, I need to speak to you privately. Let's leave Gillian here, and I'll take you outside. So the room, and the doctor just turned the radio on before he left, and then they closed the door. And just watched through the window of the door. And Gillian sat listening to music. And suddenly she started moving. And suddenly she started dancing. And the doctor then said to Gillian's mother, you know, Gillian is not sick. She's a dancer. And what that meant is that Gillian thought her dominant line of intelligence was kinesthetic or somatic. So Gillian thought through movement. That was the way that she perceived the world. And her mother consequently took her to a dance hall, and she was introduced, you know, she entered a room full of people just like her and became a dancer. And what's very, very interesting is that in the 1930s, attention deficit disorder didn't exist. It wasn't something that you could have. Therefore, there wasn't kind of medication that could be prescribed to Gillian. So this doctor had perspective to see that she was merely a dancer. And anyway, Gillian went on become one of the most successful choreographers in the history of the world. She was responsible for Opera and other such shows that have been running on Broadway for years and years and years. She's made a huge difference to the lives of millions and millions of people. And, of course, you know, made an incredible career out of it as well. So the moral of the story, if it were, is that we're all different. We're all incredibly different. And as you say, there are amazing scientists and amazing doctors, all the rest of it, that are suited to the intellectual mind, and the intellectual system of education works most effectively for them. However, there are numerous other people who are not. And my work as a coach is about supporting people to identify the lines in which they need to work on and the lines in which they need to develop in order to really connect with and experience their purpose in life. And what's very interesting is that instead of having a flash of lightning epiphany around our purpose, we can just start investigating the different lines that are available to us and looking and meeting the different parts of ourselves that haven't had the opportunity to really be fully expressed in the world. It can be such an incredible thing just to encounter a different part of ourselves. Like, for example, I feel very drawn to the somatic line as well. My mother was a dancer, but it was never something, you know, everyone said to me in school, you know, you know, the arts are at the bottom of the pile and it's the science of the mass you've got to focus on.
Hey, Mike, you know what? Your signal is suddenly breaking up. Well, it was breaking up before and then it comes back and then it breaks out again. Are you on a headset?
I am, yes.
I'm going to ask you to unplug it and plug it back in and see if that makes a difference. Or try talking without it. Let's see if
Hello?
We can get an echo. Yep.
Hello? Is that better?
Yeah, that is much better.
Okay, great. Sorry about that.
Let's use that. That's okay. So I didn't want to interrupt you, but I, you know, we didn't also want to be able to understand you, so.
Absolutely.
So where did you fall in all of this? I mean, what did your parents expect you to do versus what you were doing that brought you to this? So yes, you know, there's lots of people that you've, you know, related to the you know, the choreographer of Cats, the other authors, things like that. So where were you in your line that you know, what was expected of you that wasn't working?
Well, What was interesting was that I was, you know, I was very much supported as a child, and I came from a privileged middle class background, and I was very much supported to pursue my passions. However, in the presence of, you know, a very dogmatic system that suggests, if you want to be a top player in this game, you need to do these, and then you're going to get that. And you know, that's a really difficult thing for a lot of people growing up. It's like, wait a minute, you know, I want to be a fireman, or I want to be a dancer, or I want to be a musician, but all the money is in being a lawyer or being a doctor or being a you know, something else that's at the higher end of the intellectual spectrum. So I think there was always a deep inner conflict with me around, look, I want to have lots of money and I want to be really successful, but the paths to those things do not offer me any kind of satisfaction or fulfillment.
Okay, so is that what got you into the drugs, is looking for an alternative fulfillment in the alcohol and things?
Yes, I would say that, you know, for example, like, drugs offer us access to a lot of different states, you know, and then we have our kind of our sort of dreaming state, we're sleeping, and we have our kind of deep sleep, and then we have our kind of the witness state where we're observing the whole experience. People have these sort of dreams where they go out of body, and then we have that, and then we have the most profound state, the sort of sense of unity of all the interconnection of all things. And drugs support us to access these different states. So I would say that my drug use was what Carl Jung describes as a shadow behavior. And the idea of shadow is that basically we're all trying to grow. There's this deep in all of us this indomitable demand to evolve. And that's what we're all doing here, in my opinion. That's why we're all listening to the show. That's why this show exists. That's why the whole personal development industry and many other industries exist. It's about growing. It's about growth. But what happens is, you know, we want to grow, but we also do not want to be rejected from the tribe, you know, because we want to, you know, that's so intrinsically linked with our survival for thousands and thousands of years. We have not wanted to be rejected from the tribe. Therefore, any way that we want to grow that does not fit with the tribe's values and make us rejection, we do in shadow or we do in secret. It's a misguided attempt to grow. It's a way of growing in secret, and it often manifests in dysfunctional behaviors. I would say that my use of drugs was an exploration of different states of consciousness. It was also an attempt to grow in my, just to escape the kind of thing of the dominant intellectual system in which a creative person like myself, who's very engaged in the somatic line as well, a movement person, really couldn't function or fit in very easily. And then what happens is, as I became increasingly marginalized, I became increasingly addicted to various substances and increasingly disenchanted with the system. And I was like, well, I don't want to play this game. You know, I can see that there's clear winners and there's clear losers in this intellectual game that I've been asked to play in school, where I have to sit down and be quiet. And, you know, if we look at the definition of education, it's use, is to bring out the answers from a human being. And that's why, for example, I do some work around moral education. It's not about me giving someone answers, it's about me supporting to bring out their answers. And what happened, we kind of transitioned from education to really what's instruction or indoctrination. Well, we're sitting passively and we're listening and we're being told and we're having to remember and then we're tested and then we're marked. And it's not really education. So as a child, even though I didn't have the language to articulate all of this as I do now, I knew something was wrong. I knew this wasn't right. And that's what we're seeing. A lot of kids, like, for example, you know, I spent a lot of time in my life wetting the bed. You know, I used to wet the bed until I was about 7 years old. And what I realize now is that every animal that wets themselves is a clear sign that something's wrong. It's a clear sign that something's not okay, that there's something not right. And I was experiencing this every morning before I went to school. So it's just a clear sign that our bodies have a story to tell. Our various intelligences are constantly trying to find expression in our lives. But that's very, very hard when we're so focused and so emotionally hijacked by money and the earning of money and the paying of bills and the career and the progress that we make in order to gain more money. And what seems to happen is that we're so stressed out by this process that we're going to end up spending all the money we earn on kind of comfort to assuage the stress. So it's a very negative cycle. And it's a cycle that really needs to change. And is changed, which is very exciting.
Okay. One thing I did not mention to our listeners is, if you'd like to ask a question of Michael or make any comments, there's a couple places that you can do that. Well, I'm going to ask him to unplug his headset again and try and see what happens. But you can reach us in several places. One, there is the discussion in the chat room that's open on the bottom of the Blog Talk Radio, Purpose Talk Radio room, and the link that we have. If you scroll all the way down, you do have a chat room there. The other place then is on the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations page on Facebook. And if you have not joined that, you need to ask to join, and I will gladly add you into that, because I do multitask here pretty well usually. Give me a minute to get over there and see it and that kind of thing. And then the other place, if you're calling in by phone or by Skype, I know a lot of people are calling in probably through Skype or listening on the computer here, but those who are would like to call in from the States or Canada, You can call 347-205-9074. Again, 347-205-9074. And whether you call in or Skype in, please hit 1 so I know that you are wanting to talk to Michael or to me today, and we'll get you on the air. You can type questions or comments into either of those chat rooms also. At the top of the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations page, there is a pinned post specifically for today's show, and if you're listening on the archives, feel free to jump on that and make any comments that might resonate with you also from today's conversation. And I know Michael's giving us a lot of details and a lot of you talk about the intelligence of here, you know, a lot of the more scientific and types of things here. So if you have any questions or concerns, please make sure that you do ask him of those, or put them in the chat room, and he'll jump over there during the weekend and answer the questions as well. So, okay. Michael, so you're 15 years old. The system's not working for you. You're dropping out of school. What does that mean for you? I mean, I also know this, the education system in Spain is a little bit different than it is here. Are you in a high school? Are you in a college? What level education are you in at 15 over there?
Well, I grew up in England, and I went to school in London. And I would have been at a level called GCSEs, which happens just before sort of college. And then you would go on to university. It was just a profound sense of failure, a profound sense of alienation that many of us experience throughout our lives. What's wrong with me? It must be my fault. There must be something wrong with me if I'm not able to fit in this intellectual box that everyone else seems to be able to fit into so effectively.
So did you notice it before that, or was it just this sudden, Jesus, I'm supposed to be graduating in whatever a year, and, you know, it just isn't working for me? Were you noticing it along that whole education system?
Yeah, very much so. I would say I used to have to go to school when I was very, very young.
Okay. And then, of course, you know, up to a certain point, you don't have a choice. You go to school because your parents say go to school.
Absolutely. They feel they're doing the right thing. They trust that if you get an education, you're going to get to university, and if you get into university, you're going to get a good job. And of course, as Ken Robinson points out, you know, a degree is no longer enough to get a job. A BA and an MBA and a master's and all the rest of it, and the line just continues growing further and further and further as this system, which is predicated on academic achievement, just continues to go. And of course, complete and sustainable growth is not a linear thing. Growth is cyclical.
Okay. So at 15, you're dropping out of school. Where does that leave you in London? Are there opportunities for you? Can you get a, like in the States, we get a GED, a graduate equivalent diploma, by taking a test and studying a few books and courses and things like that, but we don't have to actually be in the classroom, and it's, you know, to some places it's the equivalent of graduating from high school, and some it's not. It depends on your employer, but, you know, at least to get you a diploma that allows you to be hired out here. Is there something like that in London, or where did that leave you?
That left me with a job in a supermarket.
Okay. So then what was your aspiration at that point? To be able to, were you trying to do some writing? Is that when you started your poetry, or what? Because that, you know, to a lot of people, that's considered basically a dead-end job. You know, it works for the time being. It is something that, you know, kids have for high school or summer and that kind of thing. It wouldn't have given you, you know, a living wage probably for the rest of your life. So what were your aspirations then at that point? Or was it just, I'm getting out of this system and I didn't care, you didn't care what it was going to get you at the moment?
Aspects of a meaningful life. I didn't understand why I had to continue a game that I wasn't enjoying. Of course, the money, the carrot, the end of the intellectual system is, of course, financial well-being, financial benefits. If you stay here and you study this long, you're going to get a job, and we're going to give you this much money. You're going to be able to spend your money, you're going to buy a house and all the rest of it. And unfortunately, that's just not even true anymore. You know, there's people with degrees who are homeless. And there's a wonderful video on YouTube of a chat with, you know, myriad qualifications, including a master's and all the rest of it, who's homeless just because he just couldn't make a repayment on his house and the whole thing was just closed down, which was, you know, at the point of the great sort of global recession some years ago, the most recent crash.
Okay. So how was the supermarket going to be paying the drugs, or did you get into dealing them as well then?
Well, you know, I mean, at that time, at that age, everyone was sort of taking drugs and just trying to kind of buy some as well. You might end up with a small little bit extra for yourself, you know, but I mean, it was really, you know, it was all about consumption, really. It was whatever means that one could consume. And I remember dearly, there was a wonderful chap, his name was Wayne, and he came to me, he took me aside on the supermarket floor. I was in the clothing section of the supermarket, and he said, "Michael, you know, we like you, and we think, you know, you're a pretty intelligent guy, and you can really do with the company." He said, "The normal absence rate for our employees is 4%, and yours is 24%. And unless you do something about this, you know, it's not going to work." And I said, "You know what? This isn't working for me anyway. I'm going to leave." And I just moved on.
I'm sorry, what was that about again? The signal. Why don't you try unplugging the headset completely and just using your computer? You know, I heard something about, was it 4%?
Well, what I was saying was that basically he just told me that the normal absence rate for an employee at the supermarket was 4%, and that mine was 24%, and that was the point in which I decided that, you know, I thought, okay, I'm going to move on from here. Is my signal okay now?
Yeah, I think it's going to be better, and hopefully I won't echo back. I'm using a headset on my end, so hopefully it doesn't echo, but I think it's going to be better than it breaking up.
Okay.
Yeah, so it is in the headset. That's actually a good thing. I was afraid it was going to be in Skype or again in our connection, so. Okay, so here you are, again, 15, supermarket, drugs, women, men, whatever it was, I'm not even going to ask. One way or the other. But like you said, getting laid, getting high, getting, you know, just whatever you wanted out of life and didn't care necessarily, I presume, who it affected, what it affected, took you on a, you know, just further downhill. And, you know, what I read in your bio was basically at 17, you're so far into it that you don't even want to live anymore. Right?
That's right. My first trip to rehab was at 17, and my attempt at suicide was at 18. And what's very interesting is that Sarah Jane Blakemore, who's a neuroscientist and has also done a TED talk about a process that happens in the adolescent brain called synaptic pruning. And what happens during adolescence is that we essentially cut away all of the synapses that we aren't using and strengthen the ones that we are using. And that is why, you know, teenagers, and we become so focused. And for me, it was, as you say, parties, drugs, sex. And then I got into the party scene about 15, and I started going to a lot of rave parties. And what's very interesting about that is that we used to go to these raves and take a lot of drugs in order to really have some kind of spiritual experience, to experience a sense of community, unity, togetherness, to experience a sense of, you know, sort of transcension, ascendance of the mundane. And, you know, we would go there, and the music was like our hymns, and the MCs, like sort of preachers, and the DJs, you know, were like the kind of organ players in the church. So we would go there and worship, you know, the dance, as it were, every weekend, and it was just wild. And it was just so draining to the body, because no one was eating properly. And, you know, no one really had money to spend on food. Everyone was spending all of their money on drugs. And, you know, for a sort of skinny person like myself, that was, you know, my body could only take so much. So by the time I got to sort of 17, after 2 years of going out every weekend and just kind of destroying every kind of ounce of energy that I had, I became very, very ill and very, very depressed. And then and the sort of high, you know, the low became much more pervasive than the high. And I would go, I would plunge into profound depressions. And this led to kind of a deep sense of self-loathing. You know, I wasn't earning enough money. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't strong enough. I wasn't effective enough. I didn't have what it took. I didn't, you know, all this kind of negative dialogue I started to propagate in my mind. And this is very much linked with purpose, because a lot of us start to experience this kind of negative self-talk when we are not living in the correct lives. And we're stuck in this intellectual system. System's telling us that it's our fault, that we're the ones who have the problem. Which is very much indicative of intellectual thinking. It's always right and wrong, dichotomy-based thinking, you know, which is profoundly ineffective when you're dealing with the vast quantities of people that are alive on planet Earth today. And Caroline Heldman does an amazing TED talk on dichotomy-based thinking and the object subject dichotomy. So, but basically what happened is, you know, this story that I wasn't good enough and I wasn't getting enough girls or enough money or enough drugs or enough experiences and all that kind of stuff led me to feel profoundly worthless. And as I spoke about, my synaptic pruning had led me in a direction of drugs, cars, and sex. And that was no longer meaningful either. So I felt like there was really no meaning to life. And at that point, you know, I began to feel like there was no living. You know, having my first trip to rehabilitation center. And, you know, at rehab, really what they try and do is introduce you to emotional intelligence and connect you with some kind of emotional awareness. And they do this in such a way that it's just not as effective as it could be. Now that I understand a little bit about emotional intelligence, and that being another one of my very, very strong lines that I've worked with very thoroughly over the last 7 years. And excuse me.
So the reality is, okay, you come from school that you think has expectations of you that you can't fulfill. Then you go into your life and you can't fulfill the expectations you even have for yourself. Interesting dichotomy that you had to deal with. And, you know, and that makes sense in, you know, why you ended up rehab, why you end up trying to kill yourself. And, you know, a lot of, like you said, a lot of teenagers feel that way. And it's like, where do I fit in? How do I fit in? I can't fit in. And there is no, you know, not, the world does not leave them with alternatives. You know, I remember when I was, what was I? Probably 16 or so, 15 or 16. And I, you know, for my life, I was more intelligent than my classmates would have liked. Let's just put it that way. You know, being the nerd, you know, not an athlete at all. You know, sure, I did what I was supposed to do in school, but, you know, I couldn't build relationships. I didn't know how. And, you know, our family wasn't close per se, which is fine. But I didn't know how to fit in. And, you know, my outlet was writing, you know, which, you know, is one of yours, which we'll get into here. And my parents found a note where I tried to explain to myself what was going on, and I was frustrated, and, you know, they considered it a suicide note. So I get what you're saying. You know, I look at some of the things of my friend's kids now, and I go, how, you know, you've got all this stuff laid upon your shoulders to be in sports and to be in this club and to have all these service hours before you even get out of high school so that you can get into college and get what you need and get that scholarship. You know, it's a lot of stuff for kids. You know, it was tough when we were kids, and it's even tougher now sometimes. You know, so I get that. You know, so what, you know, what do you have a suggestion for people, or what did you end up doing in the end? How did you get through some of this? And is it something that you think people can use now?
Well, you know, I attempted to take my own life. That was how I decided to deal with. And it was funny because it also intersected with me turning 18, which in our kind of common law these days, you're perceived as an adult. So I also had suddenly had this extra burden that I was 18 and somehow, you know, the day before I'd been a teenager and suddenly today I was a man. Yet I'd been given no instructions or training of any particular sort of how to go about being this thing called the man. And it's interesting because I cut my own wrists. And often in initiation, in tribal cultures, there's always a wound involved. Because the older men take the younger men out of the village, and they, you know, in cultures all over history, many different ways, these younger men are initiated, and they learn how to serve the greater good. They learn how to have a purpose that goes beyond themselves. And they're wounded to remind them of the suffering that life will bring, the inevitable suffering that life will bring. So in a way, when I turned 18, it was almost like a self-initiation. It was a self-wounding. And, you know, I didn't know at the time that through that wounding experience, it supported me to believe that I could survive anything. You know, I was in sort of within 10 minutes of living. I was bleeding thoroughly on the floor. And by some miracle, my cousin, who was staying at my house, in my family's house, woke up and came downstairs to get a glass of water. So it's one of those moments of just incredible synchronicity or miracle or whatever you choose to call it. But what's interesting is that was for me. From that point forward, I plunged into a complete sort of nihilistic, self-centered, complete disregard for anything, because I thought, look, I've tried to kill myself. I've essentially said, look, I don't work. I'm not a functional human being. So now I really don't have to take pride in anything I do. Now I can just destroy myself without anyone really caring, because I've already shown that I'm not interested in this game that everybody's playing. And so you know, that led sort of 7 years of internal conflict, of just in and out of different, you know, in and out of different addictions, different drugs, you know, different jobs, but just endlessly trying to find some kind of sense of meaning in life, be it through relationships or whatever, endlessly trying to be and failing miserably, thinking that it was about how I looked, or thinking that it was about, you know, what I had, or thinking it was about what other people thought of me and other such things that younger men were taught when they were growing up in small tribal cultures. You know, and what's really interesting is that you know, to have a tribal culture, we need a community. And communities depend on a diversity of talent, as Ken Robbins says, and not a singular conception of ability. So it's really, really interesting that, like, at the moment, we have very little sense of community in our world, although it's starting to arise again, because everybody is stuck in the same line. Everybody's stuck in intellectual intelligence. And community arises out of one person being very strong in a somatic line, another person being very strong in a, you know, in a moral line, another one in a willpower line, another one in the interpersonal line, which is about fitting in and communicating with people, and all these other lines which you can explore via Ken Wilber or other developmentalists. So I would say that the sort of truth that I've come to, or the affirmation that I came to as a result of my suicide attempt, was realizing that I am here on this minute because I am worthy. I'm here because I'm worthy, and I am worthy because I am here. Or there would be no other reason for me to be here. So, you know, or as Einstein says, you know, you have mass. Essentially, you matter. Quite a nice play on words there. But just the very act of being alive in the world today is a profound thing. And that's what people need to know. And people need to know that there are incredible parts of themselves that are just dying to meet them. absolutely dying to meet them. But we've been disconnected from those as a result of this gross overindulgence in one line. And as Jalaluddin Rumi, the great Persian poet, said, you know, your longing is the path. Your longing is the path. And we are very disconnected from our longing. Because, for example, if I want to be a musician and I've got this longing to make music, but, you know, I'm an intelligent guy and there's the possibility of making lots of money being a lawyer or taking over the family business or something like that, you know, my head's going to tell me, don't be ridiculous. Music's not what it's about. Make your money and then you can do whatever you want. And then I just get completely hijacked by the money-making process. I turn around at 45 and suddenly my life's just gone before my eyes and I'm ready, you know, I retire early just in time for my coronary or something like that. And it's all very tragic. So I would say that, you know, that any person who's feeling down, and actually there's a chap called J.D. Scram who, well, and it was about his suicide attempt. And it was called Break the Silence. And it inspired me so much that I created a Facebook group called Break the Silence, Support for Suicide Attempt Survivors. And people have started, and I've been putting some articles out there and other people, you know. And it's just a place to connect in a safe place with other people who've had a similar experience. And what I want anyone who's going through anything like that to know is that there's just incredible parts of themselves dying to meet.
Is that a secret group or is it a group that people can join, Michael?
It's a Facebook group. You know, you just the group and then you get in.
Breaking the Silence. Okay, go ahead. Just wanted
it's called,
to, you know, if people were interested in that.
Yeah, I mean, I can stick a link on the page. But yeah, it's just let's get us in touch with our longing. And how do we do that? We need to really heal, you know, because although we're interested in different lines, everybody's got different. You know, as Picasso said, you know, we're all born an artist. The trick is staying one. And that doesn't mean, an artist doesn't mean just painting or making music or writing poetry. It means being creative. It means really living our purpose, as is the purpose of this discussion. And there's certain like tools that are, or part or education that we all need, in my opinion. And one of those is generally a thematic education, is to relearn our gut instincts and to relearn how to follow our heart and to relearn how to listen to that real, just, you know, when you just, something gives you the willies, as they say, you know, like, you know, really when you get like a bad feeling, you know, to really be able to start to intuitively understand those things. And, for example, Doc Childress started a thing called the HeartMath Institute in 1991. And there's a raft of research that's gone into the heart. And actually, there's a huge amount of neural tissue in the heart. It actually, in a lot of ways, the heart communicates with the brain and tells the brain what to do. So he started this concept of the heart brain. And there was a guy called Michael Gershon, amongst others, who wrote a book called The Second Brain, which is our gut brain. And there's also a huge amount of neural tissue in the gut. So things like just follow your gut and just follow your heart, which become kind of trite platitudes in the intellectual context, are actually really true. So one of the skills that we need to learn is how to reconnect with our gut, how to reconnect with our heart, those kind of things, which sound very sort of silly to some people. We're so based in our dichotomy of right and wrong thinking, and so based in our cranial brain. And it's you know, there's incredible people out there doing incredible work in all these areas, and all these dots are starting to join up. And finally, we're at a point in human development where nobody has to be right or wrong anymore. Nobody has to pretend they have all the answers anymore. Nobody has to say this is the one true path or this is the perfect path. We're seeing that there's partial truth in everything. We're seeing in everything. And we're in this wonderful age now of what Arundel describes as deep democracy or radical acceptance, as Kenmore describes it. Of just everything's coming together and old ways of being are coming back, like we're seeing with the gift economy. and the moving past the monetary system of some trade, and all sorts of things, permaculture movement, sustainability movement, all these things, you know, really starting to gain ground in this age of radical acceptance and new ways of thinking and cultural diversity. Or, you know, again, to quote Rumi, he said, beyond ideas of undoing and right doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. And very much, many, many people in the world are very much heading towards that field that Rumi speaks of, which is essentially a new level of in the world, a new level of consciousness. It's like the world's been flat and it's turning again. You know, the same kind of huge shift in the way that people are thinking about themselves and the world around them. So very exciting time to be alive. Really, really fascinating. And as Ken Wilber said, you know, there's never been before in the world so many ascended masters and experts in so many different areas. Never before have we had the framework in order to organize all of these things and see how they interact. So it's truly fascinating, time to be alive. And that's so against what I feel the news is telling me and what I feel other forms of media are suggesting, which is really exciting. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Okay, so let's go back to your story here and let's get some more concrete stuff so we can move this forward here. So what did you do? You went into poetry, you started doing some things. You know, what moved you into finding your purpose? How did you specifically create this new environment for yourself? You know, your cousin found you, basically went, no way are you going to end your life today. You might have just tried, but too bad, it's happening on my watch. And, you know, brought you back into, you know, a new reality here, a new perspective. What happened for you then?
Well, you know, as I said, I lived a further 7 years or so in debauchery and hopelessness of varying degrees. I spent a year traveling. My father had a heart attack in 2006, and it was a kind of real wake-up moment for me, and I left England, started traveling, traveled all over the world. You know, again, my sort of hedonism and my partying just came with me, and I was just, you know, just drinking in different bars and getting high in different places all over the world and having a lot of inconsequential relationships. And then I arrived in India, and I started to get exposed to some real, you know, interesting spirituality, universal truth, that kind of stuff, and that was all great and very enlightening. And then the drugs kind of, the negative impact of the drugs started to take their toll, and I started to do drugs again that I hadn't done for some years, and I experienced a profound bout of drug-induced psychosis when I went into total terror. And then, you know, I had a horrible experience, which I've later been able to understand in a very, very different way. But anyway, I somehow got back to the UK, got into rehab, and then I went over to South Africa. So I did about, you know, I did a month of rehab in England, and then I did a further 3 months of rehab in South Africa, and a further kind of, further 6 months, I think, of rehab. So, yeah, I ended up being in rehab for about 9.5 months in primary, tertiary, and secondary care. And through that process, I started to read stuff, and I started to get exposed to the concept of values and moral education. And I started to realize that to go in or what direction I knew my purpose was in, I knew it was change or die. I knew that. And I knew I had to move in the direction of change. And my dear, dear friend, and also the guardian, godparent of my daughter, Robert Montgomery, who's just a wonderful human being and a beautiful man. If you're listening, Rob, hello, I love you. He said, I'm going to do this life coaching course down in Cape Town. And I thought, well, listen, if I really want to be involved in change, let me do this life coaching course. Let me work with change. Let me work with other people so that I've got my fingers in change all the time. I'm immersed. You know, I'm completely involved in this process. So I kind of started to get the scent, if you like. I started to get the scent of something better than what I had created for myself in previous years. And I started to follow that scent. And then I did an actual valuation process with Rob. During his co-training, he took me through a process, and I started to understand what values really are. And the way I perceive values is they are what we want to create and experience in our lives. So one of my core values, which is very much associated with my gut, because the way that I work with people with their core values is I work in the somatic line, the moral line. So I try to find out which part of a person's body, the four core feeling centers of the body react to certain values. And my gut value has been compassionate truth. It's been about speaking my truth with courage, but also with compassion. And that just sits in my gut so comfortably, and I feel it guides me so positively. And so it starts to become a criteria for decision making. And my value that's in my heart is inspired level of kindness, inspiring kindness. It's to be truly kind. It's to be a kind human being. It's to care. It's not to turn a blind eye. It's to really care. And again, so that's another value. So I have another criteria. So when I'm confronted with a decision to make, I'm able to reference my values and say, well, what is the direction that I want to go with this? Does it sit well with my different values? And at the time, I was able to start moving in a positive direction. And then subsequently, you know, some years later, I was exposed to the concept of a mission, having a mission, but beyond the sense of like a company mission, of having a profound life mission, constructed of our core values. And that's the process that I work with. And a mission acts like a kind of North Star. So my mission in life is to help people get and stay inspiring. And what that means is, you know, the etymology or the origins of the word inspiration is inspirare. It means to breathe in new life or to breathe in spirit. So I'm not necessarily telling people I want to inspire you. What I'm supporting people, my mission is to support people to breathe in new life, to breathe in new ways of being, to breathe in new liberating ways of thinking, to breathe in new liberating ways of being in the world. And that really inspires me, and that's a really fascinating thing, and that's, you know, why different intelligences, lines of development inspire me so much. So anyway, I was able to start moving forward in a positive direction because I had decision-making criteria. So if an employment opportunity or a work opportunity came towards me, I'm able to say, well, listen, okay, intellectually that makes sense. However, I now have these other intelligences to consult. Does it sit with my values? Does it sit with my moral intelligence? Well, let me check with my gut. Let me check with my somatic intelligence. No, actually that doesn't work. So I have these extra faculties to start navigating the landscape of the world. And once I start to have these extra faculties, life becomes a much more open, liberating experience, much more full of paradox, much more full of new ways of thinking, much more inspiring because I'm breathing in new life. And that took me forward. That was the way that I started to navigate. You know, as Leonardo da Vinci wrote, plot your course to a star and you can navigate any storm. So essentially a moral code, as a samurai had, you know, is a way to navigate any kind of battle or catastrophe that one might experience.
Okay, and then, okay, so then you took on this coaching with Rob and learned it as well?
Well, that's right.
I went to
the South African College of Applied Psychology in Cape Town, and I studied there for a couple of years and really was exposed to myriad different coaching practices, which was very, very interesting because there's so many different ways to work with people's development. And what I didn't realize then was that all of these different practices were essentially working with different lines, or certainly in different ways with different lines. And I didn't realize this. And you know, the very, very sad thing about many schools of psychology and psychiatry and all the rest of it, and other disciplines, is that students often spend the first year at least understanding why their particular mode of thinking is superior to others, and why their particular way of working works better than other people's. And this is, you know, this is very much a limited paradigm. And what's very exciting about Ken Wilber's work is that he's managed to bring together all of these things and look at the partial truth in everything.
Okay, so, for those who are, might be coming in late, would you tell us again who Ken Robinson is?
Ken Robinson is a creativity expert, and Ken Wilber is a developmentalist who's made a profound impact on the world with his work and written over sort of 20 books over the last 30 years.
Okay. And when you're referring to students, are you saying students in general, like when they go to college? Are you talking about coaching students, spending the first year?
Well, I'm talking about any, you know, if you go and learn a new psychology right now, if you decide you want to become a psychologist and you go and sign up for a particular school of psychology because you think it sounds like a good one and you think that they've got a good angle on the human condition, the chances are that you'll be, you will spend the first year determining why that particular school of thought is superior to others or more effective for the work that you're trying to achieve or trying to do. And this is a very limiting way of operating. And, you know, we made this incredible contribution by saying, well, it's a game that we want to play more. Let's look at the partial truth in everything. Let's move beyond right and wrong dichotomy-based thinking. So my journey progressed and continued, and I graduated from the college. It was a very interesting experience. And I decided to specialize in a process called the thinking environment, which was created by a wonderful American woman called Nancy Klein. And it's basically a system of listening to ignite the human mind. And very, very strong in the cognitive of development and the interpersonal line of development. And essentially a very, very advanced form of communication, a form of supporting individuals to do their best thinking. And it's really, really, really fascinating because on the subject of thinking, you know, one of the key factors of thinking well is environment. It's the way people behave when they're thinking in their presence. If they're listening to us, or they're just waiting to tell us what they think. And it's also the physical environment that we're in as well. You know, they say to us, you matter. And that really resonated with me because when I was growing up in school, I was thinking a lot of different things. The environment wasn't saying to me, you matter. It was saying, do this, and you'll be okay. Even if you hate it, just do it. And a lot of people are having this experience. You know, their jobs do not say, you matter. Their jobs say, you are here to work, and we're going to give you money in return. You know, and that's, you know, it's a very soulless existence for a lot of us. And a lot of us are not passionate about the work that we do. And it's a great tragedy. It's a great, great tragedy. But it's one that is hopefully reaching a kind of impasse. And a new level of meaning is coming into the world.
Your signal's breaking up again. So I don't know if it's, again, we're losing on that. Okay. You were wanting to take us through something, potentially an exercise around the affirmation that you had, I am here because I am worthy, and I am worthy because I am here. Did you still want to do that today? Or
Yeah, very happy to do that.
Okay.
I'd be very happy
to do
that.
Why don't we move it to that direction then and see what we can do to build on that.
Okay.
And again, if anybody's interested, in the meantime, if anyone is interested in calling in or getting to us again, you can dial in on the phone, 347-205-9074. Again, 347 205-9074. Press 1, or if you're coming in on Skype, which is next to the phone number if you're listening on the computer, on the website, you can click the Skype and call in, and either one, hit the number 1, and you'll be in the queue. And in the meantime, we'll let Michael take us through this exercise to so we can ourselves build on this affirmation for the week.
So I'd like to just frame this affirmation a little bit. There's another amazing TED Talk by a woman called Amy Cuddy. And she's a sort of social scientist, and she's done a lot of research into body language. And effectively, the way that we, our physical posture, we stand, etc., has a huge impact on our thoughts, on our thinking. Because essentially, like, it creates positive emotions. If we stand in a power posture, like we're a rock star in front of an audience, you know, of thousands and thousands just loving it and they're loving us, it's positive emotions, and positive emotions enhance our health and our thinking and many other things. And then I want to just give you an angle that, you know, basically affirmations are like program ourselves. And, you know, Plato said, you know, those who tell the stories rule societies. Those who tell those stories rule society. And if we think of ourselves, if we think of ourselves in the context of a being of multiple intelligences, then we become like a society in an we become like a society, and our inner world becomes like a society made of many different intelligences. And if our intellectual intelligence is the one who's telling all the stories and telling our gut feeling to be quiet and stop listening to your heart and all the rest of it, and just make money and be safe and all the rest of it, then it's going to be ruling our inner world. So we need to start telling a little bit of a different story in order to empower ourselves to think and feel and be a different way. And we do this through affirmations. And affirmations can be really cheesy for some people, and they can just feel very unpleasant. And again, that's a very intellectual reaction to these things. And I really encourage you just to drop that and just to try and move past your intellectual stuff around affirmations. Because, I mean, I can bring it from my experience. You know, first couple of years of being in the presence, just felt like a really, really unpleasant feeling of, like, this is really cheesy, I want to do it. So let's use some of this information to empower us to open our hearts and our minds and our guts and our bodies to this experience. So I've already mentioned the affirmation. So I want you to, if possible, you can stand up. Or you can just do it sitting down. Just be it. And you almost like stand up, and you want to almost like start having a shower of just like moving your hands to your hair. But you just feel like it's like having a shower. And you just start to feel like body sensations and your physical state will start to change. And you can almost feel like you're taking a bath, you know, I mean a shower, excuse me. And then you can start to work with this profoundly true affirmation. And I, in terms of affirmation, I think it's really important that they're profoundly true and that they bring universal truth to our lives. And I believe in this particular universal truth. So start to touch your hair. Oh, and you can say, I am here because I am worthy. I am worthy because I am here. I am here because I am worthy. I am worthy because I am here. And just try that now. Just try. You might be laughing a little bit, or you might be feeling a bit awkward. But just let yourself go. Let all that intellectual stuff go. You know, just give your mind a break. I'm sure it could really use one. You know, with the amount of thinking we do, your mind could really use a break. And just let it sink in. I am here because I am worthy. I am worthy because I am here. And even though you can say it again, like you're telling yourself, I am here because I am worthy. I am worthy because I am here. And it's just a lovely, frame of reference to look at the world from. You know, it's just a lovely to just bask in the ambience of. So if that affirmation doesn't work for you, try a different one. But work, you know, explore at how your different intelligences interact. And look at how they can complement one another. You know, a somatic experience is great, but a somatic experience plus a wonderful cognitive experience plus something else is even better. So agree with that.
So start with the I am worthy because I am here. Cool. And it's just that simple. You know, we're all here. You can't deny that. You know, we're physically... In some physical form, we're here, we're listening right now, we're seeing a computer, we're feeling the air, whatever, we are here. You know, whether we feel like we could be or shouldn't be, there is no break around that. Even as the energy, you know, people who just say, you know, all we are is energy, we're not in this physical form, it's our imagination, we're still here, so it doesn't matter. And hopefully, you know, everybody can at least say that part of it. And then move forward to the I'm worthy. You know, and looking, you know, one of the things that I'm struggling with, and again, a lot of people around me at times go through, is, you know, looking in the mirror and saying I'm worthy and I'm a good person and I love myself and all that. And this is a good way to start it at the very basic. You know, I'm worthy because I'm here. Simple as that. Can't break it down any simpler.
Beautiful, so. Beautiful. I'm so glad you brought that up, Cindy. I really wanted to mention, you know, that the body image movement is gaining so much ground. It really starts to move on this very linear, limited perception of how we're supposed to look. You know? And it's so sad and it's so damaging that everybody is told that we need to look a certain way to be sexy or to be loved. It's really, really sad. And, you know, that stuff seems to be changing little by little. And that's very, very inspiring to me. Because,
true.
You know, I spent for many years looking at myself in the mirror saying, you're not good enough, you're too weak. You know, you haven't got your act together. Which is very much, you know, a lot of intellectual thinking. A lot of intellectual thinking. If I had, at that point, accessed my sort of insight, or looking within, I would have found a very different answer. Or if I had, you know, if I had accessed another form of intelligence, my interpersonal intelligence, and I communicated with someone else, they would have said to me, no, you know, actually, you're okay, you know, and that kind of stuff. So we really, it's really important to understand that we cannot rely on our intellectual intelligence to give us a reliable picture of reality. And we've experienced this time and time again. You know, for thousands of years, everyone thought the world was flat. And even when Pythagoras proved it wasn't, and then Aristotle created the evidence 200 years later, it was because of Columbus, you know, trying to find Indonesia, trying to find the Spice Islands, and getting hopelessly lost, and ending up in the West Indies, that we believed the world was round. So I mean, it's, you know, our intellect. Is so invested in certainty that it will go to the greatest lengths to create that certainty. And that's why beliefs are so powerful. Because if I'm certain that I'm not worthy, my entire life, everything I think, feel, and do, and act is going to reinforce that belief. Because that's how intellect works. That's how powerful it is. It's such an incredible faculty. However, if it's not supported effectively by other intelligences, it can become very dangerous, very damaging. And we're seeing, like, so many people just feel rotten about themselves. So many people just don't feel good enough. And all the rest of it, and it's just not fair.
Okay. So, what else did you... I mean, were there other things that you wanted to share with us today that we didn't get the chance to yet? Or... And we pretty much covered everything else.
Absolutely. I think one of the key problems that we're experiencing as human beings in the world today, and particularly pertaining to purpose, is we have, as you know, as a consequence of our intellectual overindulgence, we're all starting to live vicariously through screens. And many of us are seeing hours and hours and hours online. and we're getting our social interpersonal needs met through social, like social networks online via Facebook, and we're getting our needs met through online systems, and we're not going out there in the world, we're not having experiences and meeting people and making mistakes and, you know, doing things. And it's really, really sad. And what there's a wonderful Jungian writer called Robert A. Johnson who suggests that essentially the reason for this is because, you know, things like action movies give our psyche just enough serious nourishment, just enough to soothe or to satiate the authentic call to real adventure within. Just enough, you know, romantic comedies, just enough romance to satiate the need for romances in real life. We start to emulate what we see on screens. And life, you know, TV no longer kind of represents life. Life represents TV. And it's a really, really sad way of being in the world. And again, a consequence of overindulgence in the intellectual. And there's so many ways that we are exploring other parts of ourselves. Like, for example, I've spoken a little bit about the somatic line, the kinesthetic line, which is the movement line, which for anyone, even if you don't think you're a movement person, even if you feel really edgy or uncomfortable about movement, if you move, doesn't matter what shape you are, if you move in a positive way, like through a kind of dance like nobody's watching kind of thing, you know, and let yourself have a bit of fun without feeling shame or without feeling like it's not okay, you will feel good. You will feel positive emotions. And that's a really, really, really powerful thing, people, because a lot of us are just feeling bad and thinking that there's something wrong with us. And if we think that long enough, it results in pathologies. There's neuroses and complexes and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, as Albert Einstein said, you cannot solve a problem from the level of consciousness that created it. And different intelligences operate in different levels of consciousness. So if I try to, you know, if I'm having a lot of bad thoughts and I go and I try and think my way out of it, you know, it's not going to be very effective. So we really need to, like, let go a little bit and start to explore other faculties, even stuff that we feel like we could be hopeless at. It really doesn't matter. We've got to allow ourselves to make mistakes. As Llewellyn Vaughan-Lee is, you know, is one of the sort of most well-renowned spiritual teachers. He's a Sufi teacher of a particular lineage in the Sufi tradition. And he said that Sufis see mistakes as a divine spark in human beings that supports human beings to transcend even the realm of angels. So essentially what he's saying is, like, it's unique to us. We're the only creatures alive on planet Earth and blessed with the opportunity, the ability to make mistakes. And it's such an incredible skill. It's such an incredible tool. It's such an incredibly liberating thing to be in the presence of a person who's okay with being wrong and not getting everything right. But of course, because the intellectual schooling system is predicated on academic achievement, mistakes are terrible and everything's a test and everything that I've got to get extra points here and there, you know, and like these days, you know, university applications start in kindergarten. Everyone's trying to get extra points for this and that thing, and it's just absolute lunacy. And we really could do ourselves a huge service by allowing ourselves to just explore life, different areas of life that we perhaps feel will not make us any money or will not serve our financial needs in any way. Bring joy into our lives. And as Rob Johnson goes on to say in his book, ecstasy, understanding the psychology of joy. You know, when we experience, when the human body experiences ecstasy or joy, as we might through some wonderful dance technique like five rhythms dancing or biodanza or Sufi whirling dervish dancing or some other kind of wonderful dance, we experience literally ecstasy. The word ecstasy is derived from ecstasis. It means outside the self. What he says is that in these moments of joy, literally step outside of ourselves and the wall between the soul and the self is lowered. We're supported to make transition from the kind of sensual world of self-seeking, money for the sake of it, sex for the sake of it, sensuous world, poets, artists, dreamers.
That releases those endorphins. You know, it releases those endorphins that we need to put our lives into a positive spin.
What it releases is what's been depicted in mythology for thousands of years and most familiarly to Western mind as the Grail moment. And when the Holy Grail touches our lips, we experience this profound moment of purpose, this profound connection to what it is we're here for. What is it we need to achieve? What is the gift that we need to unwrap and share with the world? And these profound moments, like you said, there's going to definitely be things kicking in and all the rest of it that really support us to really find out what our deepest purpose is in the world, our deepest sense of direction. And we reach these states in many, many different ways. So my real kind of suggestion to anyone listening is follow your bliss. Connect with your longing. It is the path. And experience joy in a more visceral, more tangible, more physical way than you ever have before. And wonderful, wonderful insights and feelings and experiences and new ways of being, liberating ways of being in life and of purpose and direction will come to you. That's a wonderful thing. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And to be a person who is willing to do this kind of work, who's willing to follow their bliss and follow their joy, even if it means not following the conventional models of success, is a great and noble service to the entire human species. I honor you in your explorations, good people.
Thank you. Well, I just want to summarize a little bit of what you said, and hopefully I hit some of the high points, because again, we know some of the signal is breaking up. But basically, if you're finding yourself in a space that you feel you just don't fit in, make sure you talk. Find some people that have found their purpose. Find some people in your life that you can trust and bounce some things off of them as to what you can do for alternatives. Start writing. Start finding the creative things that you can do. Or if you're a very logical person, find some logical things that you can do. Even writing lists, even going out and, if you're a logical person and like the intelligent stuff of math problems, go find some Sudoku books or, something that will adhere to what you enjoy and what your mindset is. Because if we can't keep our mind busy in the areas that suit us and suit our personality and our intelligence type, we tend to become very frustrated. And then if you are finding yourself, too, in careers, again, that don't fit who you are, you've got to find an alternative. Yes, the career may need to pay the bills, but you need to find things that will allow you to be a part of who and what you actually are needing to be. So, go out, dance, go out, sing, do things that... It doesn't matter what other people might see or say for you, but instead, do it as if no one's watching. Find a way to do it as if no one's watching. you know, because life is short. We need to fit in somewhere, somehow, to get through it. We need to connect and have those relationships with other people. So that pretty much kind of summarize what you said there today for us?
Cindy, it does. It's a beautiful summary, but I'd really like to add something very, very important that I started with. And that's this idea that basically purpose, growth, inspiration, self-actualization, individuation, evolution, awakening, whatever you really choose to call it, you must understand very, very clearly that growth of any kind or individual demand to evolve that is in all of
us. Michael, we're not getting any of what you're saying at the moment.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So what I was saying is that success, achievement, progress, personal growth, spiritual growth, inner work, individuation, self-actualization, transformation, awakening, evolution, whatever you choose to call it, is suitable to evolve and find purpose. The most important thing to be aware of is that the sense of purpose, freedom, and wholeness we seek, or how we choose to put it, will only happen through the balanced development of multiple intelligences or developmental lines, as Ken Wilber calls them. And this means leaving our intellectual comfort zone and embracing many of the faculties at our disposal, such as cognitive, logical, moral, emotional, somatic, creative, poetic, interpersonal. Interpersonal mission is to become like an existential detective. Start to look at the things that really resonate with you and understand why. You see someone on, like doing some amazing dancing or something like that, understand that as a hint that you need to move. The reason that resonates with you and that you think it's awesome is that you want to move in a different way, in your own way. You know, someone's voice resonates with you, you sing beautifully. It's because you want to sing. If you read my poetry and you think it's amazing, great, because you want that poetry. Poetry is a particular intelligence itself. And I've explored that deeply, and I've done work around that. Maybe we can talk about that another time, or you can talk about that. But it's a very healing way of just touching base with ourselves. So please, just explore and start to understand everything you're experiencing in life, everything that you're resonating with, everything that you're not resonating with, is hints as to what you really want and what you want to experience, what you want to need. And that's a wonderful thing. When you start to see the world in this way, everything becomes a picture that you can't even see yet. It's a beautiful picture. It's an incredible picture. You know, every one of us has the incredible artist within us who is capable of creating this beautiful picture of our lives. And we're just so limited by remaining in the kind of narrow ambit of mind and focusing solely on survival. And really, we need to do, you know, of course we need to survive and we need to make a living, but we need to start exploring other avenues of experience.
Okay. All right, Michael, we have Paul calling in today, and he has a question for you. Hello, Paul. Welcome to Purpose Talk Radio.
Hi. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And just, Michael, great to hear you and to hear such a positive, transformational message. It really is lovely to hear your enthusiasm, energy, and, pleasure to have been listening for the last hour or so. What you remind me most of all is how happy doesn't just happen, that I need to work at being happy, and that when I don't work at it, knowing what makes me happy and doing the things that make me happy and almost in a disciplined way is important to be happy. I love your ideas about the multiple dimensions of intelligence. And I'd just like to maybe ask a couple of things, really. One is about how I've really very much tried to follow my bliss and I've moved career and really have gone some way down that line, and nevertheless I've kind of hit the fear. So I've, you know, given up a lot of income and I've gone another way, and I'm some way down that road and things are beginning to happen, but they haven't fully happened. And I guess I've hit a bit of a backlash in my own life around the choices that I've made to do what I love. And of course, what I love turns out to be a little bit less beautiful and shiny, because I'm now doing it and I hit all the stuff that happens when we try and do things for real. So that was one thing. I'd just love it if you could comment on that. And the other thing was how you talked about the world coming together and you know, the exchange community and various things. And yet I notice also, particularly in Europe at the moment, and I don't know how much you're following it, but there's a huge resurgence, backlash against a more tolerant, connected world, with the rise of right-wing groups in Europe and even in the UK, which is where I come from, and is just horrifying me to see what's happening. And there seems to be this clash of a progress forwards and a backlash back, and I just wondered if you could comment on those two things.
Well, thank you so much, Paul. It's really lovely to hear your voice. Let me think about the first point that you made regarding following your purpose and arriving at a place of fear. From my experience, and I've spoken to this a little bit, what I feel is that fear that you're experiencing has a story to tell. And what I believe and what I'm kind of starting to work with is the idea that basically, you know, you have incredible emotional intelligence and you have incredible intellectual intelligence and you have this incredible somatic intelligence, and they led you to this point where you're really connected with your fear. And in my opinion, and what the way that I'm working with my own fear and my own shame and other stuff, is that I'm treating these emotions as invitations to dance. And I'm taking them to a movement meditations, and I'm going on Thursday for 5 days to like a movement meditation retreat, and as I spoke about a little bit about Robert A. Johnson and his book Joy, which is a really worthwhile read, is just taking these feelings to the dance floor and thanking our amazing intellect and our amazing emotional intelligence for doing the work and getting us there, and then just diving in very, very deeply and really aiming for that kind of unique trance state or transformational state, and seeing what that has to say, finding out, you know, what that place has to offer. And in my opinion, I believe that there's new levels of insight and understanding and connection in those areas for people like yourself who are highly in your emotional intelligence and highly developed in your intelligence. So now I'm going to speak to your second point a little bit. And that was about the interconnectedness of all things. I've just started to do this course with Ken Wilber called Superhuman OS, which is a great name. It triggered me a bit. And essentially, different levels of consciousness are different ways of thinking the world. And we've seen a kind of gradual progression in consciousness throughout the thousands of years in human beings. And Ken Wilber has studied every kind of culture and all their different maps to create this kind of overview, this bird's eye view. And basically, we started going through these different states of consciousness and the state of consciousness that is involved with homophobia and other kind of like nationalistic, xenophobic things is a kind of ethnocentric stage. And a lot of people are still at the ethnocentric stage. And then some people have moved up to the sort of world-centric stage where we're kind of, you know, that was the kind of human rights movement, kind of hate crime law and that kind of thing. And then some people have moved up to the sort of integral stage, they call it, or the kind of cosmocentric stage. And this is this new way of thinking in the world, that all things are connected and all the rest of it, and like we're all one. And there's truth in it. There's scientific truth in it, and there's other truths in it. And what Ken Wilber suggests is that basically it's not human beings that fight. It's actually levels, it's actually ways of thinking, paradigms that are in conflict. Because what happened is, up until now, every new level of consciousness that's arisen for human beings has discredited the previous one. So we have this kind of mythic level of consciousness for a long time, which has been religious belief and monotheistic gods and that kind of stuff. And then scientific thought came in, credited all of that. And suddenly science became the new way of thinking in the world. And we moved into what was called the belief stage, as Ken describes it, where we started to discredit everything and say, actually, there's no truth in that, and there's no truth in that either. And we started to see the destruction of many hierarchies and that stuff, and the dissemination of a lot of different ways of being in the world. But again, that also discredited the previous two stages. But this new stage, which is the cosmos-trick level of awareness, is actually the first time that we've included all the previous stages. And that's why it's called second tier, which is such a fascinating thing. For the first time, move beyond right and wrong thinking, cosmic-based thinking. And for the first time, we're sitting in that field that we're talking about, beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right. And there's lots of different work that we can do to establish ourselves more fully in that field. And apparently, at this stage in the world, 5% of the world's population are operating from that level of consciousness. And apparently, it will only take another 5% to create as Malcolm Gladwell calls it. So that's really exciting. And that really inspired me to do my work and to really embrace my truth in all its wholeness and stop allowing myself to regress into ways of being and thinking I know do not serve me. And if I see myself part of this uber organism, part of the whole, do not serve the whole. I hope that information has been helpful to you.
It was difficult. You broke up a little bit. I got the gist. I think I got the gist, but you were breaking up quite a lot. But lovely food for thought. What was the book for Ken Wilber? If I wanted to start reading him,
I would suggest Google Ken Wilber, and there's so much stuff.
I just did. It's like 5 books. So I just okay. Yeah, I'll just.
He's written 20 things. So really just delve in there and see what resonates with you. I mean, the particular course that I'm doing is very, very effective for me. It's a kind of overview of life's work. It's called the Superhuman OS.
Okay, super. Thank you very much indeed. I'm much appreciated.
Thanks so much for calling in, Paul.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye. I'll put you back on hold if you want to keep listening.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. At this point, we're pretty much at the end of this show. So if you've got another comment, and then how to contact you, please, Michael.
I need to help contact me.
I'm sorry?
Information?
Yes. How do we contact you? How does someone contact you if they want? Because we're down to the last minutes of the show.
You can reach me on Twitter at MichaelDale9.
Michael
Bill, right? Okay. Visit my website, a sort of blog thing, which is www.MrMichaelDale.com.
MrMichaelDale.com, no periods in that or anything? Is your website?
No.
Okay. And then the Twitter was at Michael Dale.
Michael.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Well, I thank you. Like I said, if you get one closing comment for us, you can do that. If people can understand it. You know, I hope that this wasn't as broken up as my signal was. We'll find out in the playback, of course. But so if you have any closing comments for us, we'd appreciate it.
I would like to say a few words from Neil Sagan. It's worth a full century of glory given the frightened weak to the strong. Thank you.
Well, that sounds like a good way to end it. I appreciate that. That's true. You know, we do need to find the beauty in life, no matter what it, where we can do it. So, okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to put you on hold as I wrap up the end of this show. And I appreciate you being my guest this week.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thanks.
Okay.
Yep, good day to you. And get some rest now because it's getting pretty late out there.
Thanks very much.
Okay, that was Michael Dale over in Spain. And there are a couple of comments in the Facebook chat room of Purpose Talk Radio Conversations. You can feel free to type in anything else that has resonated with you, or if you're listening in the archives during the week, anything that any questions you might have. Again, we don't know what's going on with these signals, but hopefully we get this straightened out. Don't know if it's because it's an overseas call-in or what happened, but hopefully you could understand it well enough. I think we could. Let's see. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can do so at Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y, at PurposeTalkRadio.com, PurposeTalkRadio.com. That site also is the location of several things, information on our past and future guests. It includes some of discussion about what Purpose Talk Radio actually is, and it will give you a link to contact me directly if you'd like, instead of trying to remember the actual email address. Speaking of upcoming guests, next week in the United States we celebrate Memorial Day, but we are still having a show, and our show will be with Renee Baraboo. And she has a Facebook group that she called Building Authentic Relationships. And I know we will be discussing a bit about that. And it feeds right into what Michael was saying today. You know, you need to find those relationships and connect with people to be able to get through life, not just these things on Facebook or these superficial relationships. We do need deeper relationships in our lives. As we move on, you know, they will help us find our career. They will help us connect with people in the world that might be a resource later if something's going awry or if we need to share something wonderful that we've created. All of it is necessary. So let's see. And other information. Oh, also on the website is a button to donate or to sponsor our show. If you'd like to do that is much appreciated as well, especially if you have some service or product that you think listeners of this show or people who are looking to determine their purpose, if you have a service or a product that you think might be of interest and useful to them, please do let us know, and then we can advertise that for you through sponsorship. I think that is pretty much our show for this week. So I thank you all for listening. Again, today was Monday, May 19th, and still is in most parts of our listening audience. I don't see any questions in either of the chat rooms. I thank you folks for being a part of both the chat room on Blog Talk Radio and the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations. So having said all of that, please join us again next week. Live will be noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. in the U.K., 9 p.m. in Spain, if you'd like to pick us up there. And like I said, we'll be enjoying the Memorial Day holiday in the United States, but we will still have a show. So having said all of that, I wish you all a great week of living your purpose. And to all of you, thank you for listening, and soul blessings. As we close with the song I Am Who I Am by the group True Trinity, you can find them at truetrinity.com. And that is Julian Clark, Rachel Martinez, and myself. Again, soul blessings to you all. Have a great day. Thank you.
I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me, I am who I am, I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.